we're at a very primitive point right now, and I always, like to think, I always say that we were evolved in the forest roof to collect fruit and berries, not to understand the universe. We're very, very primitive. And so when I try to explain biocentrism, it's very abstract for a lot of people. But for me, it's really hard, because what I think, and I'm sure what a lot of people here feel and know to be the case, there aren't words for it. The words are wrong. I mean, I have to use the English language, or if I use another language, there are words, and almost the use of any of those words which are designed to break up nature into fragments have problems with them. So I have to communicate using a very, it's like using, a ratchet, to hammer a nail, and it's the wrong tool. So when I describe biosensorism, I'm trying to get a bigger picture out there, but the words really don't exist for most of these concepts. And even biocentrism is just only that far. I mean, I would love to write part two and three, but no one would understand. It wouldn't have a clue. It just wouldn't relate. What they always say is for pseudoscience is when you're too far away from the existing school of knowledge. So if you go too far, there's nothing for people to relate to. And this is very abstract for a lot of people to understand. I mean, people think of space and time in very concrete things. I'm going to be late for work. My boss is going to kill me. You think of very concrete terms. You're not thinking of it as, a tool of intuition. It just doesn't. So I think that we do have intrinsic limits. But I do think that, like driving a car, that after you drive the car, you don't have to worry about that. So then you can talk on your cell phone or text, because you don't got to worry about the pedals. So my guess is that in 100 years, those students will probably be where we're at. And then they can go the next level, where people can then can understand the next layer. Because clearly, what I'm telling you about, I mean, I can only go that far without sounding like a nut. Although a lot of what the great spiritual leaders came up with is exactly what I would conclude. I mean, because they're correct. It's just, when you try to explain it, what does it mean for civilization? The truth of the matter, if space and time aren't real entities, the walls of space and time don't exist. So if you hurt another person, you're hurting yourself. You're just too stupid to know it. I mean, I don't mean just theoretically or poetically, for real. I mean, you are really, if I punch you, I'm going to experience that, for real. But you say, well, I'm the one with the suit and you're the one with the blood. But it doesn't work like that. So it would lead to an absolute humane society, But, whether we could ever get to that point, there's too many people who would want to take advantage of whatever exists, then I don't know if we can get there. But, I think certainly anyone in the know would realize that. And it's at the point where, there are a lot of people who really are pissed. I mean, real pissed. So, a lot of people very critical. And then Immanuel Kant summed it up really well. He actually, I think it was Hubert Spencer, the great philosopher at his time in the 17th century, he actually was reading Immanuel Kant's Critique of Pure Reason and threw it on the ground and said, he's a stupid man. And that's the reaction. And Immanuel Kant had said, I have to presuppose that anybody who doesn't have the roots of this within them is going to react that way. And that you have to have those roots within you or you won't. And indeed, that's exactly what you find. There are people it resonates and they go, right on, Bob. And there are other people that want to put me in a straitjacket. And, I guess that's a good place to be, but if I went any further, then I would have lost all credibility. So, if people understand it and it is established, then I could take the next step and write the book I would want to write. But I can't do that right now without losing credibility. But if people start to understand that there is a problem with the our worldview, and I think it's happening pretty quickly, that probably it may not even be 100 years before people realize, because we're in transition in our worldviews. it's not going to free you from, you know, pain and suffering. That's what life is about. I mean, you know, without putting your sweat in, nothing's going to really mean anything. What it will do is it will give you, to some extent, I wrote the book and a lot of the blogs that I've written, is that a lot of people, for instance, are just terrified that this is going to die and cease to exist. And they have loved ones that have, that, you know, the loss of a spouse or a child or someone that's very dear to you. I mean, it's almost beyond what these people can bear because, you know, and it's over. You die, it's just run to the ground and it's over. And people are afraid of death. And I'm thinking, all of you people are afraid of these things and you're worrying about the wrong thing. You know, it's like, you silly people out there. It's like, you know, don't worry about that, believe me. You know, it's like, you know, my father, you know, only have probably a few weeks left. He says, but how can you be sure? How can you be sure? You know, and it's like, I mean, it just seems, I mean, once you start to think this way, it just becomes absurd to think any other way. I come from a sort of a rough background, so I need a lot of color to, you know, to be entertained. So I cause trouble no matter what, even though I could be at complete peace with myself if I wanted, but I'd be bored. but it's good to know that no matter what happens, it's okay. It's fine. You're experiencing life. That's what it's about. So, yeah, I mean, that's why I take my risk. You live your life. That's what it's about. That's what you're doing. And, you know, I don't know. It does give you a sense of peace in that nothing can really go wrong. Yeah, I mean, you may die, or you know, something bad may happen. But I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble with this, but I sort of ascribe to Spinoza's view of happiness, pain, and happiness. Happiness is the transition up; pain is the transition down. So you really can't disconnect those. What you can do, though, is to change the way you view life, how you treat other human beings, and the way you view what's going on. What physics is just trying to do is, you know, take the clock apart and figure out how big the wheel is and how it spins, and is it a smaller one, or is it a screw, or is it a Phillips, or is it a regular screwdriver that they put it together with. And they may learn that, and that may give our lives some comfort, and maybe they can feed more people or do whatever. So I think, you know, trying to understand how the pieces go together is interesting, but I would put that in the category with Einstein once said, that he's not interested in this or that detail. He's interested in how God made the world. And they're not going to figure that out. So, you know, I think that they're basically just trying to figure out, you know, just like what most scientists do. We're technicians, and they're no different than surgeons. So I don't think that in any way, shape, or form could even remotely start to tell us anything about life and existence, that they can't do that. So they're basically just trying to figure out what's going on within the world that's here. You know, how does a virus replicate? How do the molecules go together? That sort of thing. So I think it's obviously all of the things that we've seen in terms of, you know, cars and automobiles and our quality of life have happened through understanding, you know, how to manipulate the matter around us. But it doesn't at all impact the bigger questions or the things that are really important in life. So I always like to say that reality is a process. It's an active process. It's not a thing. It's not an object. So everything you can know, feel, and experience is a form of consciousness. It's your experience, spatial, temporal relationship. It's an act. That's why when you ultimately dissect into the atom here, all you got is these particles whirling around. It's motion. And what is motion? Is the movement in space and time. So that is what motion is. As a matter of fact, when you look at the electromechanical wave, you have the magnetic wave jumping over generates the electric, and then that generates the magnetic at right angles, and it leapfrogs at the speed of light. So what it is you're defining, it's actually an equation, and it's actually a structure that defines at the very bottom of the universe, or the bottom of the physical world, that network that if you were to rationally dissect it, would define space and time and movement, which is how it all assembles the energy. So again, when you think of a rock or you think of your body, you're already dealing with a spatial temporal construct. So anything electromagnetic energy, any particle, a cell, you call your brain, that's already a spatial temporal construct. So so when people get confused when they call, you call it brain or you call it mind, if there's no space and time before, there are tools of the mind, there can't be rocks or objects without them. So again, reality is a process. It's not a thing. So the rock, any physical object, has no existence independent of life. All consciousness. Yeah, so we can only know our universe, and that's us, and every 13.7 billion years back or whatever. So that is our universe, but space and time are tools of us genomic-based creatures. So you think of the logic of you and I being here on top of time. Even Stephen Hawking now, has a new top-down cosmology where he's saying everything is a probability waves, and it actually, the past is determined by the present. So if you think about it, if a particle has all these possible outcomes, and it's not until you observe it that it collapses to one probability, and until there's a present, how can there be a past? So what you have here are ways we think, which is, again, why we're on top of infinity and why it's not, you say a gazillion chance of all the things that had to be right for us to actually be here. That's absurd. The probability of us being here is zero, because that's not the way it works if you're thinking in that terms. It's because I'm sitting here, and if you follow that spatial temporal logic, this floor is in California. I got to remember where I'm at. And that's going on the Earth, which is spinning around, which is going around the Sun, which is going around the Milky Way galaxy. And if you go ultimately to the exhaustive spatial temporal logic, you will come to the end of the known universe physically, the spatial universe. And if you go all the way back in logic to time, you go back to your singularity. But they're theoretical constructs, because, again, all we are is extrapolating that spatial temporal logic. But that doesn't necessarily mean those are the only information systems possible. But we can't understand those other systems, because we think in terms of space and time. So all of our knowledge is going to be relational based on spatial temporal thinking. You can only experience the world piece by piece. That's the only way it could possibly work. I mean, otherwise nothing would exist. If you weren't you and experiencing you the way you are, nothing would exist. So, in other words, what's going on is that you only can experience the world piece by piece, because that's by definition how the process works. It's what you're trying to, where you're running into the problem with you and me, what it comes down to is how you connect space and time. Space and time, I always like to say that they're like the shells that the turtle carries around, that we carry them around. That is why space and time are relative to the observer. That is why all these experiments are all showing that all the behavior, every single property of an elementary particle out there is observer determined. And so what is going on is that your linearness, your everything you can possibly think about the universe and about everything is going to be relative to you. And then what happens is that then, for me, it's another sphere, and we're all separate spheres. But where you can't make that connect is that space and time aren't just out there ticking. They're not objects. And so this linear sense of time, Einstein even said it, the distinction between past, present, and future is just a stubbornly persistent illusion. We want to just, because, we know we die and, we have kids and we know, we had grandparents and there were dinosaurs, and so we just automatically just assume, time is, like an arrow. It's linear. But it's not. I mean, yes, all those are relative, and all those events did occur in those relations that you're aware of from your scientific books. But what your scientific books have wrong is that when you die, there's not a matrix out there that's just ticking and it all goes on and you're just some ashes down there, because that's just not the way the world works. It's not the way matter works. It's not the way, objects are put together. So you're only capable, and we're only capable of relational thinking. So your space and time is always going to be relative to you, and there will be a break. So when you die, and the continuity, say, for instance, in those connections, you can no longer just think of everything only being in that time course. You have to think of it more as you can take any perspective as your new perspective. So like Einstein said, you know, every observer is, you know, is relative to itself. So without your unique perspective, you can take any other viewpoint as your own. You're just trying to, what you're doing is you're connecting up your space and time as though there's a matrix out there that's still ticking away. And it's not that way. That is why that particle, when they don't look at it, is the probability wave and can do everything. It's a statistical probability. It's not real until it's observed. It's all relative. So if she dies, you're still going to be here, right? I'm still going to be here. That's the case. It's just how you're connecting them up. Yes, if you know, I were to kill somebody, they would die. But that's happening within our common overlapping experience. And so cause and effect happens. I always like to say, people say, well, if your mind creates all that, then why isn't the world, one physicist criticized me, says, the best proof that Lanza is wrong is that the world isn't the way we want it. And I always say, well, no, if you jump off the roof, you're going to get hurt pretty bad. I said, cause and effect is going to kick in. That's the way it works. So we can't change cause and effect. Now, I don't know what people believe in particular about that, but the point is that the way we put these pieces together are correct relative to the way we experience them. But it doesn't mean that there's a matrix out there that's just going to tick, and that if we were to die, the world is just going to still go around without us human beings. That's again, reality is a process. I don't know if I'm getting there. I always think of the universe this way. Think of it this way. Is that a record, a vinyl record, and you're listening to a song, okay? And before that song is the past, and ahead of it is the future. But you only listen to one of those songs at a time. But if you're not listening, it doesn't mean the record doesn't exist. It always exists. It's just that you can only listen to one song at a time. You die, you know, it's just a reboot. I mean, however you want to say it, you can go through all different ways, you know, reincarnation, whatever you want to do. They're all relative. It's just as long as you got your terms right. But the moral of the story is that this silliness about, you know, like I said, that, you know, you die and you just rot into the ground and, you know, and the world just ticks along independent of you know, the space and time which are necessary for its very existence. It doesn't add up. And all the experiments, one after the other, I could run through 100 different experiments that every one of them shows you that all of the properties of matter, of particles, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, all of these are observer determined. They're all based on the observer. And now, I grant you that the physicists will attack me and they will say, oh, you're just stupid, because everyone knows that those quantum phenomena only occur in the micro world of the atom, and that there's another world, us, the world of us human beings, that's a whole other set of laws for. And so I come back and go, well, they've done new experiments. They have crystals back in 2005 that had entanglement ridges that big. And so I always say, well, then where are the laws of physics changed between there and there? and they've now done these huge, there's a paper that was published in Nature last year with ions that were entangled that had all the quantum phenomena. They've got buckyballs that were carbon-60 molecules. And actually, I think there was something just a few weeks ago that was like 10 times bigger that had all the quantum properties that was bigger than a carbon-60 molecule. So we're already into the macroscopic world, and those properties, indeed, are still there. It's just that they still not going to change their thinking. I mean, I'm sure that we would do the scaled-up superposition and show what happens that there, and it's not going to change their thinking. It's just too confusing for them, because they would have to throw away everything they've ever learned or everything they think about reality and nature. And that's a hard thing to do without causing turmoil to the way you think. The only problem is they don't want to deal with the word consciousness or mind. You cannot accidentally be on top of infinity. You can't. You can't. You're here. That's not an accident, and it just can't be. Okay, so you can't die. you might have to. You know, you can die, but you know, you gotta define your you. Yeah, no. you know, we're trapped with all these words, and you know, and that's one of the problems. And all of our language, everything we've ever been bombarded with on TV, all the movies, everything is you know, the world is just out there. It's just this thing. It's an object. And it's just, you know, now we've got these experiments showing, well, wait a minute, whoa, that doesn't seem to be adding up anymore. But, you know, they can't, you know, it's just very hard to change your worldview. It's very hard.